This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Resource Centre. I'm Angeline Tay. This is the second episode of the Entrepreneur's Legal Dilemma to Solution. Legal issues are often at the bottom of their list. So this series is actually dedicated to sort of be aware of what are the areas to look out when you're running a business. So with us today, we have Christopher Ma. He is a partner at Manho and Ma. Today, we're just focusing on employee issues.
Hi, Angeline.
First of all, tell us what are the usual employment issues faced within a company?
I guess the first issue I think the employer would have to be well aware of is that, you know, when you enter into an employment relation, so whether that person is actually your employee or whether that person is your independent contractors. So that is actually very commonly an issue for all the employer when it comes to handling their human resource. So why is it important? It's because when the person is an employee of a company, then the person enjoys certain statutory protections under the Employment Act and also the Industrial Relations Act, and also they enjoy their rights like to EPF and so. These are all like statutory rights. And also if a person is an employee, then when in the course of his employment he does his duties and all that, something happened and he has caused injury or whatever to a third party, then the employer is vicariously liable for the action of their employees.
Right.
And the third one will be that, you know, that quite commonly the employer is actually responsible in law to withhold and pay tax on behalf of the employee. Okay, where independent contractors, the employer doesn't have that kind of duties. That's what we call, I think, PCB retention. Mm-hmm. If you look at your payslip, sometimes you will see if you are those category who are caught, then you will see that, you know, there will be PCB deductions whereby your employer is actually retaining those and pay on your behalf. Then clearly, that person is the employee of an entity.
Right. Why are we looking at the differences between independent contracts and employees? Is there one more beneficial than the other?
Of course, like I said just now, if that person is categorized as an employee, it enjoys all the statutory protections, right? If not, then, you know, basically, the independent contractors will be doing work at their own risk, be it economy risk or, you know, personal injury risk. All these things are at their own risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they have to buy their own insurance and then they have to take risk of their profit and loss and all these things. That applies to the independent contractors, whereas the employee do not have those concerns. They enjoy all the statutory protections under the legislation.
Mm-hmm. If you put the cap of a business owner on entrepreneur, usually would people opt for independent contracts or employees?
Of course, the trend nowadays is that, you know, you try and minimize your full time, and but it's actually in law, it's not just that, you know, if you're a part time, you are independent contractors. A part time can be categorized as an employee as well.
Oh.
So in law, there are certain tests that is applicable. That those tests are a bit technical, but I think I'll try and see whether the audience will understand. So there are three kind of tests that normally adopted by the court. The first would be the control test. What do you mean a control test? From the name of the test, you know that, you know, the employer will exercise certain control over their employee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it is. You know, you not just you have control over that person. You have to actually instruct him what must be done, and also how and when to be done. All these things are actually control. You exercise control, but control itself is not exhaustive. Because let's say, give an example. For example, you have a footballer who is playing football for a club.
Mm-hmm.
So is the footballer an employee or independent contractors? Because if you see that the footballer, when they are playing in a match, nobody is there beside them to tell them, okay, you pass this ball to this person, you play like that. Not really, right? So they play on their own. So in a way, the club doesn't really have control over how they can play. They should play. But they are still expected to follow the general instructions of the club. And therefore, they are actually employee.
Right.
But the element of control is kind of like lacking in this situation. Traditionally, we use a control test, but we find that as time moves on, it's not too practical to use that, you know, it's not, it's not conclusive, mm-hmm. right? So then we move on to the second test. That is what we call integration test. So which means that a person concerned, right, must be work as part of the organization. And it forms an integral part of it. It's not just accessory to it. I'll give an example. If you talk about doctor working in a hospital, for example, doctor working in a hospital will be generally, they will face this issue, whether am I an independent contractor or am I an employee. Yeah, because doctor, they are trained professionals. So nobody is going to instruct them and tell them, you know, how you should do a surgery, you know, which part should cut, you know, which part you shouldn't. So they are actually beyond the control of the employer. But without doctor, which is an integral part of a hospital organization, then this organization cannot run.
Right.
So when you apply an integration test, then doctors are deemed as the employee of a hospital. So that is how we understand the second test. But then we realize that this test is not complete as well. It's not exhaustive as well. It's not conclusive.
Right.
So then nowadays, you know, the court comes up with all sorts of decisions and whereby, you know, you have to really look at it from a case-to-case basis. So for today's purposes, we actually call it a mixed test.
Mixed test means control and integration.
Yeah, it's a control, integration, and all other element as well. For example, the person, like I mentioned earlier, the person has to take risk of a chance of profits and loss. So if a person is taking a chance of profit and loss upon themselves, more likely or not, they will be termed as the independent contractors, because whatever profit I earn will be mine. Whatever loss that I suffered will be mine as well. So then they are not really an employee, because employees do not really care about whether the company is making profit or not. The most they will be concerned is whether I will get my bonus at the end of the year. So if company is making money, I get my bonus. But then they don't take up risk, right? Certain things is like there are other elements, like, you know, like for example the instruments, like certain things, like if you talk about a carpenter, for example, if a carpenter, he goes and work for a project and he brings all his instruments and all these tools and all that for his own work, chances are he can be termed as an independent contractor as well, because he brings his own tools. Right, so that is like some of the examples. But of course, today's purposes, due to time constraint, there are many, many other examples. But then we feel that, you know, if the employer are unsure, then they should also always consult a lawyer.
I see. Yeah. We know that business owner, entrepreneurs, I think it's important for them to identify the difference between employee and independent contractor. We want to look into how Employment Act affects business owners.
I think it's quite common, the case. Actually, a lot of audience will have known, because social media is so advanced now, that, you know, Employment Act covers, you know, person irrespective of the occupation whose wages do not exceed 2,000 ringgit a month.
Right.
So if you fall below 2,000 ringgit a month, then automatically you'll be covered under the Employment Act. What does of course, other than this category, there's another category which very hardly people will be aware. That will be like, you know, any person, irrespective of the amount of wages that he earns every month, who is doing manual work. Right, such as the artisan, apprentice, transport operator, supervisors of overseers of manual workers, or person employed on vessels and domestic servants. These are what we call manual workers.
Manual workers. Okay.
Irrespective of how much they earn, they are covered under the Employment Act. So when you talk about Employment Act, they provide the benefits to the employee who are covered, that those are mostly like monetary benefits, we call monetary benefits. Of course, there are prescribed rest days of a week. There are prescribed provisions on works, how your employer should pay you, or if you work on a rest day, and then hours of work every day, and then holidays, like maternity allowance, annual leave, sick leave, and all those.
Okay.
Yeah.
You did mention for 2,000 ringgit salary, below 2,000 ringgit a month.
Yeah, that's right.
For protection at that.
Yeah, that automatically, no matter how the so-called the employment contract is drawn up, if the employee is actually, the wages falls below 2,000 ringgit, they're automatically protected under this legislation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there's also one more thing, the applicability of Industrial Relation Act. Now, there's so many acts we're covering this week about employment issues, but we'll talk about that after this. In the studio, we have Christopher Marr. He is a partner at Manho & Marr. We're working together on this series called The Entrepreneur's Legal Dilemma to Solution. So stay with us. This is Resource Centre, BFM 89.9.
Best for money, BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. You're still listening to Resource Centre. We're joined by Christopher Marr from Manho & Marr, and we're talking about entrepreneurs' legal dilemma to solution. Today, we're highlighting a few of employment issues within the company. So we covered Employment Act before this. Now, applicability of Industrial Relations Act. Now, what's Industrial Relations Act?
Okay, Industrial Relations Act is actually quite a broad topic. You know, if I want to cover it in such a short frame, time frame, it's actually quite impossible. So I'm going to highlight just this provision, which is very relevant to the employer and actually very common nowadays, is that, you know, this is Section 20 of the Industrial Relations Act, whereby, you know, when an employee who claims that he has been unfairly dismissed, she can make a representation to the Director General of Industrial Relations within 60 days from his date of dismissal. So a lot of people has been doing that. I think, as I said previously, that, you know, social media is so advanced, and employee now knows their rights. So then, you know, then most of the employee who has been dismissed by the employer, they will try and think that, you know, whether they are unfairly dismissed. If they feel that they are, you know, they just file a representation in the IR department.
Okay.
Yeah. So that is to be filed within 60 days. And what happened after they file is that, you know, then the IR department will set up a conciliation meeting between the employer and the employee, whereby both parties can actually try and discuss and try and settle this matter amicably. So in the event this can't be settled amicably, then this Director Generals of the IR department will actually refer this to the Minister of the Human Resource.
And escalated then, quickly.
Then it has gone up to the Minister. Then the Minister will decide whether there is a case to be referred to Industrial Court. So unlike the normal procedure of, you know, filing a civil suit in the civil court, this route is actually relatively cheaper and is preferred route by the employees nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And then because they make a representation and then they will go up to minister, but minister will have the final call whether this is a case to be referred to the Industrial Court. So you can't file a suit in Industrial Court, actually.
Yeah. It seems to protect the interests of the employee more
than
the employers, right? So if you're a business owner, should they be wary of all this possibilities of, I guess, you know, the court cases towards them because the employees are having all these rights?
Yeah, that's right. So actually, that is this test about, you know, dismissing an employee.
Mm.
If you really have no choice but to dismiss an employee, you must do so with a just cause and excuse. So that is, okay, of course, just cause and excuses sounds really broad. But you must give sufficient notice for improvement, for example. And you must also document the so-called misconduct or poor performance, whatever reason that you want to dismiss this person. Try and document it by way of evaluations or by way of appraisals. And then all this preferably to be signed by the employee in issue. And also, of course, there will be there should be also domestic inquiries if you really want to dismiss this person, to give a right to this particular employee in issue a chance to be heard, to explain himself. And of course, all these things we will try and advise the employer to document it as well, so that, you know, when you try and when you dismiss somebody, you have all the documents to back you up on the so-called just cause and excuse. Yeah. So, of course, procedural fairness is also one of them. So, you have to give a procedure. A lot of bigger organizations would have the so-called SOP when it comes to dismissing somebody. So, they have to go through certain things that I said. You know, they will have to evaluate. They have to give warning letters. They will have a domestic inquiries. All these are actually good practice.
Mm. Okay, but then this isn't, I think we're going off route, right? But for example, retrenchment that happens, usually notice is probably within a week, right?
Yeah.
Would there be just and cause?
Okay, given very simple example, if you are talking about retrenchment or redundancy scenario, you must actually practice the first last in, first out rules. So basically, you can't, if there are two person doing that job, you must actually dismiss that person that is actually coming in the later, right? That is normally the principle that will be adopted by the industrial court.
Okay.
Other than that, if two of them are to be dismissed, I say two of them are doing this job, two of them are to be made redundant, then you must actually have a reason for doing so. Like, for example, that this role is after the reorganization or restructuring of the company is no longer there. So we do not need these people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we have met cases whereby the employer on one hand dismiss these two, the other hand go and employ somebody and give them another title but doing the same job. So that actually would not be a good ground for a redundancy dismissal.
Okay. The thing is, it's really hard to get talent, right? So when you hire someone good, you want to retain them, but then, you know, this employee has better offers somewhere else. Is it possible for an organization or a business owner to stop this person from working with, say, for example, a competitor?
This is actually, we got this question quite a bit from our clients as well. So I actually read an article where he gave a very good example. He said that imagine being in a relationship, right? When your significant other tells you that in the event of breakup, you're not allowed to date anyone within a period of 12 months. So this example, I think, is a very good example when to describe this relationship. Because to answer your question, the answer is no. You can't actually stop your former employee from working for your competitors. This is by virtue of Section 28 of the Contracts Act, where it says that every contract by which anyone is restrained from exercising lawful profession, trade or business of any kind is to the extent void. So basically, you can't restrain somebody from working. So the rationale behind this is that, you know, no one should be prevented from pursuing legitimate works or business, right? So employees with specialized skills and knowledge, right, in a niche area, right, they often find themselves very hard to find job other than working for the competitors if they leave their current employment.
Mm-hmm.
So if restraint or trade causes are enforceable, this will effectively limit their ability to make a living.
Mm.
So that's the reason why those clauses are not enforceable. But a lot of employer, they will still prefer to have that clause in their employment contract. That is simply because, right, a lot of the employees, when they enter into a contract, they actually don't
read.
They don't read is one thing. They don't seek legal consultation on how the clauses is drafted and all that. Most of the time, they'll just read and think they are reasonable, then they'll just sign it. So there will be under a mistaken belief that those clauses are enforceable.
Oh.
So this is also to remind the employers that, you know, when you put those clauses in, enforceability will be one issue. So that will be quite an uphill task if we want to enforce this in court. But there is a difference between a knowledge that you gained.
That's a loophole.
Yeah. Okay. If you can't restrain your former employee to work for competitors, but you actually can restrain certain confidential information for being used. So when this person goes to your competitors, you can actually refrain them from using the confidential information obtained during the course of the employment. It is very important, actually becoming more and more popular nowadays, that when you join an organization, they ask you to sign an NDA, non-disclosure agreement. So preferably those should be drafted. We also have some clients who came to us and have issues with the NDAs, and because they took templates online, so they never seek consultation of the lawyers. And then we encourage entrepreneurs or the employers to actually seek the legal consultation first before actually getting your employees to sign those in order to protect confidential information, for example, your trade secret, from being used by your competitors.
If you have more information to ask Christopher Ma here, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can write into us at enterprise@bfm.my. We'll try to address them online or, you know, for our next episode. So thank you so much for your time. We've been speaking to Christopher Ma. He's a partner at Manho and Mar, and this is the second episode of the Entrepreneur's Legal Dilemma to Solution. Next week, Wong Manho, who's the other partner, will be back with us talking about shareholders and funders relationship and also license, franchise, agency legal issues. Thank you for listening. This is Resource Center. I'm Angeline Tay, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.